The late Senator Strom Thurmond is viewed today mostly as a relic from another time, a Southern politician who was shaped by the Great Depression, World War II, and Jim Crow. Thurmond infamously fought tooth and nail to preserve segregation in his home state of South Carolina. If a distinction is made between the old right and the new right, then Thurmond's racist politics would seem to place him firmly with the old. But Joseph Crispino's new biography, Strom Thurmond's America, shows that while Thurmond may have been one of the last Jim Crow demagogues, he was also one of the first Sunbelt conservatives and a seminal figure in the story of the modern conservative movement. Joseph Crispino is a professor of history at Emory University. Again, the name of the book is Strom Thurmond's America, and we welcome Professor Crispino to the program. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for being here. What led you to this figure?
Well, I felt like Thurmond was misunderstood. Clearly, he's an enormously controversial figure in our politics today. I think you saw that about a decade ago when there was the celebration on Capitol Hill of Thurmond's 100th birthday party, and Senator Trent Lott made remarks that if the country had voted more the way that Mississippi had voted, we wouldn't be having all the trouble we've had. And it led to him eventually being asked to step down from his leadership position in the party. So Thurmond is understood. It's clear Thurmond's controversial. But I think Thurmond has largely been misunderstood in a way his racial politics have obscured the central role he's played in the broader conservative politics. As you said in your introduction, I argue in this book that he's not just one of the last of the Jim Crow South demagogues, though he certainly was that through his Dixiecrat candidacy, the Southern Manifesto, his record filibuster in 1957 against the Civil Rights Bill, or the father, you know, his black daughter and the secret that he kept. But he's also one of the first of the Sunbelt conservatives, someone who was at the beginning of, the hardline anti-communism and belief in American exceptionalism. Was a fierce opponent of labor politics and a defender of free enterprise. And he also helped forge, even as early as in the 1950s, kind of a growing role for conservative Christians within mainstream politics.
How hypocritical is he as a figure?
Well, I mean, there's enormous hypocrisy in Thurmond's politics that you see in the 1960s, right, when he's denouncing intermingling, which is against all social customs in the South, and he's keeping secret the existence that he himself had been socially intermingling and had a black daughter. So he's an enormously controversial figure because of that hypocritical legacy about the secret of his black daughter.
He switched parties in 1964, ultimately trying to dismantle many of the New Deal protections for working Americans, and in and of itself was some of that hypocritical.
Well, I think that, certainly Thurmond's larger politics, I think the broader hypocrisy is this, is that within our understanding of the role of racism in modern conservatism, there's a tendency to kind of shunt it all off on kind of the Southerners and this notion of the Southern strategy, that it was white Southerners who we know to be racist, people like Strom Thurmond and Jesse Helms, who kind of carry the racist gene into the party. And it's easy for kind of national conservatives to kind of wipe their hands of racism and say it's not really central to the movement. But I argue that throughout the rise of conservatism, there was an insensitivity to and a kind of moral blindness to concerns of racial equality and to broader racial concerns. And you see that in things like William F. Buckley's editorial in the National Review in 1957, during the fight over the 57 Civil Rights Bill, which was about voting rights, saying that, it's okay for whites to control the vote in the South because they were the superior race at that time. You see it in Goldwater's efforts to go hunting where the ducks are across the South in the early 1960s and to recruit in to the party people like Strom Thurmond. And you see it in the mid-60s when Ronald Reagan begins his campaign around issues of law and order, which were incredibly freighted with racial politics, you know. So all of that is a kind of broader way in which there's a kind of hypocrisy that Thurman is involved with in the broader history of modern conservatism.
In a book that looks at a man and makes the case that he has contributed more to modern conservatism than is generally appreciated, the question becomes, how much of what we see in the conservative movement today comes from an embracing of his ideas or an embracing of him?
Well, I don't think they embrace him. There's no doubt about that. In fact, Thurman, people, you know, only kind of South Carolinians, only, you know, people who directly benefited from Thurman's politics and knew him really kind of embraced Thurman. I think is what you saw during the Lott controversy is that most conservatives clearly kind of want to keep him up in the attic as the kind of crazy uncle of the modern conservative revolution. But, you know, I think clearly Thurman's legacy is there throughout, and the book shows it. I mean, there are different ways to think about Thurman's legacy in politics today. You know, in some ways, Thurman was there at the beginning of this fight between moderate and moderate Republicans and the kind of hardline right. And clearly, if you look at the evolution of that over the last 40 or 50 years, Thurman's side won, the hard right won. You don't see any of those old establishment moderate Republicans anymore, the Jacob Javitses and Nelson Rockefellers, the Mark Hatfields. You know, they're just not there. They weren't there last week in Tampa, and they're not anywhere to be found in the Republican Party. So that's clearly, you know, a legacy of, or part of, you know, Thurman's legacy for the right today.
So there still is the legacy, but is he still the crazy uncle that perhaps should have been kept in the attic?
Well, Thurman does, you know, Thurman's in politics. He's in the Senate for almost a half a century.
Right.
Right. And so you don't stay in politics that long if you don't evolve. If you don't, you know, Thurman was evolving and the times were evolving. You know, Thurman, by the 1980s, is moderating his position on any number of issues. Also, by the 1980s, views that Thurman had held within the GOP in the mid-60s were more part of the mainstream of the party, so he didn't have to be so strident, right? By the early 1980s, it's Thurman who's helping Ronald Reagan raise the debt ceiling in the early 1980s when the hardliners who had been elected as part of the Reagan Revolution didn't want to do it. You know, that was the predecessor to our current debt ceiling controversy today. It was Thurman who, as judiciary chair, was praised by both sides. And he helped defend Sandra Day O'Connor when the religious right was trying to say that she wasn't strong enough on abortion. So, and you know, there's a fat Elvis and a thin Elvis. There's an early Thurman and a late Thurman. And the later Thurman, no doubt, was a more moderating kind of influence within the Republican Party. In fact, you wonder if Thurman was alive today, that latter-day Thurman, if he wouldn't be, you know, challenged on his right within the South Carolina Republican Party, given the tenor of Republican politics today.
What surprised you in working on a biography of this man? What surprised you about him as far as what our view of him was publicly and what he was doing politically?
Well, I think that one thing that surprised me is just, I knew Thurman was a political animal, but just the extent of it, and the extent to which he was thoroughly pragmatic in making certain deals and in working out his career. There was just never an off switch. You know, a lot of times senators get elected, and, you know, they're not up again for 6 years, and so they take several years off, and they're not campaigning. Thurman was always campaigning, and it was never too early to be thinking about that next election. And you see that time and again when he's up in 66 and in 72 and in 78 that he starts planning so far ahead. And so he's always on, and he's always very pragmatic. I mean, we get the sense of Thurman as this diehard segregationist, but he was very kind of clear-minded in a lot of ways about when to come out hard on certain racial issues and when to kind of to lie low.
When you talk about lying low, although he seemed to be, he was still a lightning rod, though, wasn't he?
Oh, sure. And when I say lie low, I'm thinking about things like in 1954, the Brown versus Board of Education decision. I mean, we all know this is a hallmark a turning point in the modern civil rights struggle, a time when Southerners were up in arms and crying foul and declaring that there'd be blood on the steps of the Supreme Court for this decision. Thurman wasn't in office that time. Thurman was actually out of office running for the national presidency of the Reserve Officers Association. And when several South Carolinians wrote in to him and asked them, you know, for guidance on what they should do to respond to the Brown versus Board of Education decision, Thurman said, you know what, I don't have any good information for you. You really should contact the governor, and I've been really caught up with these issues of national security. It was a telling little series of documents for me, because it did suggest the degree to which, you know, Thurman's racism has to be put alongside these other political priorities that he had, concerns about national security, concerns about constitutionalism. Now, that's not to exonerate him from his racism, but he's a complicated individual, right? And that's why he's important in placing on the right, to see how his racism intersects with these other concerns that were so important for, you know, conservative Americans across the country.
The name of the book is Strom Thurmond's America. The book is published by FSG. Joseph Crispino is the author. Thank you very much for spending time and sharing your expertise with us. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me.
Again, the name of the book is Strom Thurmond's America. It is published by FSG. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.